This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Still listening to Power Talk. Coming up, it is time for the political school. We're unpacking how liberation movements move from being the hope of the people to losing support, as reflected in the recent polls. What is it that drives people away from liberation movements? Is the other question also around liberation movements, which are governing parties, also a debate that we need to have, that why do you have a situation where, for instance, the ANC says it still identifies itself as a liberation movement instead of a governing party? So when it campaigns as well, it campaigns as if it is still a liberation movement, but also a governing party at the same time. Listening to Musi Mamani about 2 weeks ago when he was delivering the keynote address at the DA's last rally to push for votes ahead of the elections, he mentioned something quite interesting, which was that we need to liberate ourselves from our liberators. Is that what we are currently seeing happening? And that's the reason why liberation movements don't enjoy as much support as they used to during the struggle. And you can see this happen in Mozambique with Frelimo. You can see this happen in Zimbabwe with ZANU-PF, as well as SWAPO in Namibia, as well as the Botswana Democratic Party. So also, what's interesting about it is that the opposition in all of these countries is mostly finds support in urban areas. So in urban areas, these opposition parties do enjoy support. Here's an interesting thing, though, about it is yesterday I called my dad and I asked him, who did you vote for? And he said, well, there's only one party I can vote for. Like, yeah, who did you vote for? So he says that he voted for the ANC. I then asked him, why didn't you vote for the DA, for instance? And he says that, no, I wouldn't vote for the DA. I'm scared that the white people might come back to govern and we'll be forced to walk around with Idombas as they used to. I then said, but then look at the DA has a black leader. Don't you think that there's a shift away from that? His argument then is that he believes that, well, you have Musi Mamani there being the leader of the party, that Musi Mamani could be removed as the leader of the party once the DA has received enough votes to govern. Do you agree with that sentiment? Which for me was quite interesting, because the liberation movement that is the ANC still enjoys the support from the likes of my father, who still believes that the ANC is the right party to be governing the country. However, though, when you look at the polls at the moment, there is a shift away from the liberation movements, including the likes of AZAPO, the likes of the Pan-African, the PAC, as well as the ANC. And as I've indicated, that this is also the case this is also the case in the neighboring countries. So to have this discussion, I am joined on the line by Dr. Musubudi Mangena, who's the former AZAPO president, as well as Professor Innocent Msindo, a historian at Rhodes University, and Nobungwele Mbem, an academic at Stellenbosch University. Let me first start with Dr. Musubudi Mangena. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Doctor.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Thank you so much. Let me start with you. Can you help us define what a liberation movement is?
Well, a liberation movement is an organization that is formed or is geared at liberating a people or a nation from oppression. In most cases, it would be external oppression or a colonial power that is oppressing an indigenous people or a people that are not a resident ordinarily in the jurisdiction or the country that is occupying the said country.
So these liberation movements, does there always have to be a struggle for it to be termed a liberation movement? And must there always be seen to be anti the government of the day?
Absolutely. That's what they are formed for. They are formed in order to oppose the occupying power or the colonizer Otherwise, there would not be a liberation movement if they are not fighting to remove the oppressor.
And then tell me about this. When you look at the United Party, for instance, during the 1960s and the 1960s and so forth, during the era of apartheid, would we then say that even that particular party, we could consider the Progressive Party, the United Party, as a liberation movement, or must a liberation movement at the core of its policies be white, or rather be black, and the leaders must be black as well?
No, not necessarily, but in the majority of cases, that's what they were. And I think the majority of people who fought for liberation were black people, generally described, that is, Indian colors and African people. At least in the black consciousness definition, are the people who were oppressed. And the other parties were opposition parties within the white ruling class or group. The country was ruled by white people. They were the only ones who were going to parliament. They were opposing each other there, but they were generally not a liberation movement, a body that is geared at liberating the country from oppression.
Okay. Professor Innocent Msindo is also listening into this conversation. He's joining us, a professor of history at Rhodes. Good morning, Professor, and welcome to the show. Do you agree with the description of what a liberation movement is, as heard there by Dr. Mangena?
I think that's a very good definition. I think it's very succinct and to the point.
And what is it about liberation movements that really set them apart from governing parties, whether it is what we're currently experiencing now or what we've experienced pre-democracy?
There is no need to actually create any distinction as such. The only problem, the only difference would be the manner in which they govern and how they seek to determine their legitimacy or how they appeal to their legitimacy. Political parties or governing in power are very, very different in terms of the way they assert their legitimacy and the way they look for their legitimacy. Liberation movements, instead, would like to keep reminding people that we are the ones who liberated you and so on. And so they think that they derive automatic legitimacy from that liberation mantra. So that is the difference. Whether there should be a differentiation of governing party from liberation movement, I don't think that is necessary, because most of the parties that are in power in Africa were in fact liberation movements themselves.
Okay, Nobungwele Mbam is also listening in. She's Nobungwele, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm good. Tell me quickly, what do you make of this description that has been given by Dr. Mangena of liberation movements, and where liberation movements in the country as well as on the continent, quite particularly in Southern Africa, find themselves at the moment?
I mean, I entirely agree with the description and also with what Prof has just said right now, that essentially, at least where the liberation movements are originating, is are more almost like you want to liberate yourself from something. So, I do agree with the description that's been given. And I think within the Southern African context, what you start to see is that immediately, like, liberation movements get into power, there's generally like a 20 to 25 year kind of lifespan, because people eventually move away from that euphoria of, okay, now that we are liberated, what next? And I think some of the political parties in how they kind of think around themselves, their ideologies, and even their policies kind of affect the what next question that comes into play, because most come from an ideological lens, especially within Southern Africa, of socialist kind of ideology, and then once they become the ruling government or ruling party, there seems to be a shift in how economics are approached within these regions, which kind of almost affects some of the founding principles, some of the initial policies that each of these liberation movements or these parties would have initially had when they were on the other side of the fence.
Nomungwele, just listen to what Mbulelo has to say on Twitter. He says, the thing is, and what I've learned is liberators can't be rulers. They should basically pass the baton or the baton to the new generation. Liberators get in power, they basically come with the concept of revenge and filling their lost years of wealth. Okay, I'm not too sure what that last part means. But basically, the sentiment that I get here from Mbulelo is that you have liberation movements who come into power. Once they're in power, they then want to push the concept of revenge, like take away what was taken away from us, as is the idea or the debate around the ANC, although some people would disagree when it comes to the ANC, that the ANC didn't really come into power and say that we're going to take away, for instance, the land when we had the discussion in Kodesa.
Okay, I'm not quite sure what the question is. Can you just maybe simplify the question for me?
Do you agree with that sentiment that liberation movements then come in and try to push a change agenda, an agenda that says we want revenge, we want to take away what was taken away from us?
I don't really necessarily agree with that entirely. Actually, I don't agree with most of it, because you start to see that a lot of these governments, in as much as others kind of fought to be in that position, more than not, there's always like some sort of negotiations with other. Not party players, but with other stakeholders who have participated within the previous government in certain ways. So I don't really think that the liberation movements, especially when you're thinking within the context of the ANC, have got that kind of that whole perspective of, hey, we need to revenge right now. It's just that some of the policies intensify or they prioritize majority of those who had been marginalized from policies and from the general composition of what the country looks like. And I just think that mainly what is needed right now from in how the national liberation movements are set up is a much more intergenerational kind of dialogue or engagement, and even kind of mentorship of sorts, because you can't just expect young people who are not aware of where the country comes from or where its politics come from to just come in and just move with the ship in a certain way. You do need to have that interaction of those who come from the liberation movement, because in as much as we feel that part of their ideas may be irrelevant, sometimes outdated, they hold so much knowledge and so much wisdom and solutions to a certain extent for the current context. And young people are much more aware of what is happening on the ground. They are much more aware of how campaigning can be done in a much more strategic way and in a way that can reach younger people. So I think that there's such a huge intergenerational gap between these liberation movements, and much of it is also linked or hinged on the fact that some of these older leaders within our liberation movements are holding on to power because they are benefiting materially from having this access, and as such, to then open it up and then have to reconfigure and negotiate your power is something that I think is not necessarily a comfortable point at this moment.
Dr. Mangena, just going a few steps back to what Nobungwele was mentioning around a certain shift, and my question then becomes, do you think that liberation movements, while policies would have ideally, or the ideology that the parties may have had, or the movements may have had during the struggle, were mostly based around race, that there is that shift where the battle then becomes more class-orientated instead of race-orientated?
Well, it does. By definition, at least in Southern Africa, the occupying powers were of a particular race. And so it stands to reason that the most of the conflict was between them and the white race. And you have to work very hard to make a distinction between a white person and the system of colonialism or oppression. So you've got to be very conscious and consciously work towards disengaging from that kind of an orientation. So, but the liberation movement tends to be very ideological. You know, they in the majority of cases they are socialist orientated. But the countries that have been liberated have not been so. They have not been socialist. And even those that started being socialist, disengaged with the passage of time.
And what's the blockage? What do you think is the blockage?
Now, I think that the world system is such that the socialist parties tend not to succeed in especially the developing world because the world economy and the powers that control it are so overwhelmingly capitalist that if you are not strong enough, you'll be strangulated. And I think this is what has happened. In the majority of cases, parties come to power, that is liberation movements, believing that they could introduce socialism in their countries, only to find that it is too hard to do that. Alternatively, if they are headstrong in as far as that is strong is concerned, they are likely to be overthrown. So it's a very difficult situation in which liberation movements find themselves. But the other thing, of course, is that liberation movements have got their set ways. You know, during the struggle, you have got certain ways of doing things. Not you are not elected by people. You form yourself as a movement. You elect the democracies within yourselves. And you elect one another, and you form the structures, and so on, and you wage the struggle. But it's a different ball game once liberation is attained, because then the rest of the population must now choose.
Yeah.
And paradoxically, whilst the liberation movement wanted to free people so that they can make their choices unhindered and so on in a democratic way, something that they fight for. But paradoxically, in practice, they tend not to want to see other parties succeeding. Mm. And sometimes they violently oppose that. It's a paradox that needs to be unraveled by probably scholars like the professors you have in this program.
Actually, Professor, what do you make of that? What do you make of the sentiment that liberation movements were liberation movements, and the sole focus has been a one vote, one man, one vote type of approach? This is what we're going for, instead of saying that this is a type of government we want.
Begin to answer your question by looking back to the question you asked Nobungwele, who is on this program,
yeah,
and that Doc just tried to respond to now. Your question was, to what extent are liberation movements, I'll rephrase it, to what extent were they retributive and interesting in righting the wrong? Secondly, whether there was any shift in ideology of the liberation movement from race to class. And I think those are fundamental questions. If we go back to them, we will be able to actually get very easily to answer some of the points that you're raising. Look, if one looks at ANC, for instance, ANC goes into power at a very different phase of history from the rest of the liberation movement in Africa. The rest of the liberation movements in Africa got independence in 1960s, in the late 1970s, and also for ZANU and others in the 1980s. So during the time they got into independence, the rest of those parties, it was a time characterized by this division between the East and the West, socialism versus capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a time of the Cold War. So the liberation movements of the time could therefore afford to dangle socialist rhetoric. And it was very important in the sense that it helped them to try to articulate the need for distributive justice. That they succeeded in doing, and they succeeded in hoodwinking people for a very, very long time, because people thought that ultimately we will be having a fair and just society characterized by fair distribution of resources and so on and so on. But very little happened, in fact, when those very parties got into power. Now, to get to ANC, ANC is a baby of neoliberalism. And that is a very important point that differentiates ANC from the rest of the liberation movement in Africa. I'm saying it's a baby of neoliberalism so far as ANC got into power at a time in which liberation movement, at a time in which neoliberalism was at the height. So because neoliberalism was at the height, when ANC was ascending, was getting into power in 1994, ANC had very limited ways in which it could negotiate itself. It couldn't directly appeal to socialism. It couldn't, because socialism had failed in the rest of Africa. And the ANC wanted money and goodwill from the capitalists.
Professor, does that then also include the ANC would then be thinking about what's happening in terms of globalization and then having an impact on how the party structure itself?
You see, once neoliberalism caught the world by a storm, and no one could resist it, because if you resist it, you don't get funding. So there was a lot of reorganization. Remember, at the time in the 1990s, right across Africa, there was a massive funding of civil societies, right, by the West. The proliferation of NGOs, questioning human rights, questioning access to services, questioning a lot of things and so on. So those NGOs became very important as initial critique of power. And ANC got into power at that time when already other movements were being questioned elsewhere. So it had to try to do things differently. Unfortunately, they got into the politics of negotiation, the politics of accommodation, the politics of moderation, which became, in my view, the seeds for their own destruction.
Okay,
when they gone radical in the socialist route, they were going to destroy themselves faster. If they had gone through the neoliberalist route of accommodation, reconciliation, blah, 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 they would only delay their own demise. And that is why ANC has survived for about 25 years or so, because it put people in that euphoric mode in which they continue to promise things and so on and so on, but never do anything radical. But we are getting to a time when people are frustrated, and that euphoria is disappearing, and I'm afraid it's disappearing quicker. So you could see then that if one understands ANC in terms of its the phase in history in which it took power, you can then understand why it has been in power for this long. But that power is being questioned now.
Okay. Professor, we just quickly need to go to Power News Headlines. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. You can also be part of the discussion. You can call us on 0861-987-000, or you can tweet us at PowerFM987, or tweet me at Aldrin Simpia. It's now time for Power News Headlines.
Speak up. Call the Power Line on 0861-987-000.
And before we go to the power hotline on 0861-987-000, let's quickly go on Twitter, where we have Buti, who says all these parties are no longer liberation movements. They are now political parties, but they are using liberation credentials to put their legitimacy in the electorate. In reality, they are all the same. That's why the urban voter is not buying into their mantra. And Zwelicha says, I think something else is happening in countries led by liberation movements, purported change. The changes are no more than a delusion, but far from dissipating these movements, thus tendencies towards gerontocracy. Jeez, what's that? Zwelicha, you're using difficult words here. I'll have to go and check what exactly this means. Okay, but quickly, let's go to the power hotline, where Skumbuzo is joining us. Good morning, Skumbuzo.
Hey, morning, Aldrin. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you doing?
I'm getting angry by your panelists, man.
Tell us.
Your panelists are angering me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Let me go to it, because I had a few things to say, but now I feel I must respond to the prof. You know, the first thing is that, Aldrin, this narrative about liberation movements is something that came from the DA-EFF alliance.
Okay, tell us what it is. What is the problem that you have with the comments that were made by the prof?
No. I'm resolving them, my brother. Just give me time. The narrative, firstly, is something that emerges from the DA-EFF alliance that seeks to weaken the ANC, that it sits below 50%, by undermining its struggle record. Now, let me go to the armchair critic, the prof. You know, the prof, what happened?
We are listening. You're on air?
Yep, your phone is breaking up. The prof, the mistake he makes, Hello?
Skumbuzo, we can hear you. You can continue. Just continue speaking. We can hear you this side, yeah.
All right. The mistake the prof that he does, is that with the exception of the Marxists in India, Nicaragua, Sandinistas, and maybe UNIP in Zambia, nowhere in the world are liberation movements out of power. That's the first fact. The lady there, if she checked her facts, she will know that Frelimo is in charge in Mozambique. She will know that ZANU is in charge in Zimbabwe. She will know that SWAPO is still in charge in fact, our ally, our international ally, is still charged in Namibia. MPLA, our ally again, is still in charge in Angola. So the narrative about liberation movements is completely false. You know, they must build a case and put it here, with the exception of the three that I've mentioned. Now, as for neoliberalism, where the prof is completely wrong, if he bothered to study our 108-year history, he will know that as a guide to action, the ANC always relied on Marxism. You know, yet its membership is open to everyone. It's a multi-class organization. And the last thing I must clarify, I think to comrade Mangen, is that to define a liberation movement outside the MDM in our case is false, because you have to bring in board the whole mass democratic movement, COSA, SANCO, the party, COSATU, and so forth. That is the liberation movement as led by the ANC in this country.
Okay, Skumbuzo, just a quick one. Do you agree at least with the sentiment that these liberation movements are losing popularity? They may not be losing, like the examples that you gave around Frelimo as well as ZANU-PF. They may not be losing power, but they are losing popularity, which could lead eventually to them losing power.
What I can say, you know, it's not a popularity context.
It is. No.
It's your view.
Skumbuzo, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing, Skumbuzo.
You'll say my time is up.
Okay.
Let me just say my view. Yeah. The point here is about, are the liberation movements servicing the people? And if there is discontent there, that is where problems emanate, as opposed to popularity, because you don't need to be famous to lead. What we need is a liberation movement that will deliver for its people.
But popularity also means at the polling box, doesn't it? Doesn't it mean that Musi
is famous and Julius put together they have over 5,000.
No. But you know, when we speak about popularity in the context of politics, we do not speak about who has the most number of followers on social media.
Then in that case, we must say popular, not populist.
Popularity. Yes.
They must be popular with the people, not
yes,
populist.
So that's what we're talking about. We're speaking about popularity. That's my question. I'm asking you, Guti, do you agree at least that these liberation movements are losing popularity when it comes to the electorate? Popularity. Are they popular?
I think it's semantic. I would prefer to say they have to be popular, but not populist.
Okay, Skumbuzo, I'm going to ask you to hold on. We have Albert in Akasia wants to respond to you. Good morning, Albert.
Hello, Aldrin.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, I like the way you're handling even Mrs. Sally from Liberia. Listen, I think the guy who's talking now...
Skumbuzo.
Yeah, he's typical of the intolerant masses of so-called liberation struggles and living backwards with their so-called liberation whatever credentials. We should not squeeze or reduce the reason why the ANC won to only the opposition not being able to chow into their masses. There are many reasons. Number one, the ANC depends on history. They depend on incumbency. They have the money to buy votes with their RDP system, the grant system, and the lie. There's one you said to me, I like this one. You said to us that your dad says that he votes ANC because he's afraid apartheid may be returned.
Yeah.
Now, the many masses of people don't know. Even I'm a teacher. Even my kids don't know in grade 12. There is no way, Aldrin, that you can return apartheid because you need the military force. You are living in the 21st century where racism and colonialism are not tolerated at all by any country. You understand? Mm-hmm. That is not possible. And South Africa is so mixed now. It's like having put salt in meat. You can't take the salt out. How do you introduce apartheid in an integrated society like ours in the 21st century? The other thing that makes ANC win is because of the narrative that they've passed on to people that a DA is a white party, and then they pull the race card. And now many people in the townships are afraid of joining the DA because they are threatened. Violence is used, and
but Albert, threatened by who?
Look. Let me tell you a story. I was wearing a DA shirt one day and walking in town. In Pretoria North, in town, and two guys were standing by the mall. They shouted insults at me. You understand? You can imagine then in the township. Try it and you'll experience it. Even in the family, they tell you that you're out of order. My brothers are big ANC people. When we talk about ANC, they become very furious and they change and foam and threaten me.
Okay.
Careless and useless, whatever.
Okay, Albert, I'm gonna ask Kumbuzo to quickly respond to you, and then I just quickly want to go to the prof and Nobungwele before we go back to the calls. Kumbuzo, quickly respond to Albert there.
No. You see, this is a part of the problem. You know, Aldrin, why apartheid lasted this long is because of black brothers like him, this guy.
Who did what?
And then when you, like him, this guy wearing a gay T-shirt, the caller that just wants to respond to me and say I'm arrogant. I never was arrogant. All I explained was what is a liberation movement and what it comprises and what are its components. Now, let me finish what this undermining that he's doing. He's putting me, he's pigeonholing me not to speak about our people and our history. At least my organization had its leader on its T-shirt. And his organization could not even put the back puppet on his T-shirt. You know? Now he has audacity to say I'm arrogant. No, I'm not arrogant. But I have to defend my organization. And I have to say where we come from. If he thinks that I must not say we had to walk over dead bodies to get where we are, he is wrong. No, I'm going to say that. You know, without being bullish, without being arrogant about it, that is where we come from. And he cannot dare say, because now we are here, we must not speak about our history. No, it's 108 years and we have to reflect on it. And my organization has adapted and is delivering services. That Power FM you are sitting on is a result of a democratic government. Yes. Oh.
Okay, Skumbuzo, thank you so much. Skumbuzo in Meyersdal. Prof, can you quickly respond to Skumbuzo?
Okay, thank you very much. And Skumbuzo, I appreciate your point that you're trying to raise. But I think he didn't understand what I was talking about in terms of neoliberalism. I was simply saying FC got to power in 1994 at a time when the neoliberal dispensation was in force. By that, I mean that the Bretton Woods institutions and the systems they founded were fully in control. And because of that, the emphasis by world governments, by World Bank, IMF, and so on, was that the market should speak. It was that politics should not politicize or affect or influence the market. Let the market forces speak. So ANC comes into power at that time. And because of the time they got into power, they had to end up having to dump, to some extent, to dump the major tenets of the Freedom Charter and the goodies that it was supposed to bring upon the African people. Therefore, the promises that the ANC had made to the African people, particularly the issue of land, particularly the issue of participatory governance, all those things got lost as the ANC had to craft policies that were meant to please the neoliberal order. That is why, ladies and gentlemen, you see that it's only after Jacob Zuma was threatened that he was going to leave power that he began to bring in the mantra of expropriation of land without compensation. It was a mantra.
Does that mantra mean populism?
It's populism. It's populism because, to be honest with you, there is no clear policy actually as to how ANC is going to deal with land, how it is going to farm and ensure productive processes on the land itself, because land is an economic resource. It is not just a political resource in the manner that they are conceptualizing it. How many secondary schools, how many high schools today have agriculture as a course? So we have got millions of students who are coming through our education system who don't even know how to plant spinach and cabbage. But the government is talking about this without putting other systems in place for agriculture to happen on the land that they have been expropriated. In a way, it is just populism that has no planning in it. So they are plunging the country into a crisis. In a way, I would like land to be expropriated. I would like to see that happening now. But the problem is, I would also want to see that going hand in glove with educating people on how to farm, educating people on the fact that the life of and future of this country is not in increasing urban settlement and in building just RGP houses. It is in training people generic skills like skills to farm.
Yeah.
And that is very, very crucial.
Okay, Prof, let's quickly go to Ngobungwele. Ngobungwele, what do you make of... Do you think Skumbuzo understood you when you spoke about liberation movements and losing power?
I think he completely missed the point. And I mean, part of me feels that this is generally how a lot of political activists, especially the ones that are linked to certain parties, there's a certain kind of rhetoric and a certain kind of narrative that they always generally lean to before necessarily engaging thoroughly. So, I mean, the things you were saying about the alliances with other Southern African countries, our neighbors specifically, that are still in the that still have liberation movements in power. That is correct. That is a very valid point to make. However, what the core topic today or the discussion was based on was looking at can they still maintain their power?
Yes.
What is really clear, besides SWAPO, is that there is really a decline in support of these liberation movements, and that's what we are talking about. And, I mean, we need to also be very critical. I mean, I know that this entire topic itself is so complex. There's so many different ways to kind of engage it. And I think that Prof was mentioning something that I had not thought about when did a country get liberation. So we need to also be critical that in as much as we have these alliances, how are these different liberation movement parties holding on to the power in those specific regions? Because we know that there's other things that happen outside of the history. I am a history student myself. So I really appreciate and I love history so much, and I understand its importance. However, we need to also be aware that the way in which history is also being written, the way in which history is also being engaged itself, always speaks to who is the dominant party or who is the one who is governing. And at the present moment, we do know a lot of the history that is written about anti-apartheid movements, even to a certain extent, probably anti-colonial movements of black people are dominated by the ANC narrative. It is not to say that the ANC did not participate or they did not contribute, but we have to be aware and we have to be critical of the fact that there is a certain way in which the ANC has kind of subsumed all other groups and all other parties that had been part of anti-apartheid movements.
Yeah.
And I mean, in as much as, and I think the one thing that I'm kind of noticing, especially amongst us young people, is that there's a certain, because I was listening to Kumbuza, I'm sorry, I forgot the other caller's
Albert.
Name, is that Albert, that there's a certain way in which now we have been programmed to a certain extent to not even to be intolerant to each other based on the certain organizations that we are linked to, as opposed to kind of having a much more open discussion, because we say that we want to lead, let's say, as the youth. However, the youth is busy holding on to these debates and conversations and fights that I personally feel to be it's not useful for us to be having that. So that kind of like intolerance and even lack of argumentation in a certain way is quite, I think it's something that we need to look into, because there is definitely a change, and we need to start to sit down and say that, okay, it's fine. I am Ms. Kumbuza, and there's this political organization that I'm linked to and I'm committed to, and I do understand and I want to advance and grow this organization right now. What are the current questions that we can ask, and what are the solutions that we can come up with? Because, I mean, the current leaders that we have been trained in a certain way. They think of the world in a certain way. Some of them are old, and they can, I mean, I'm not saying that being an elder doesn't come with wisdom and sagacity, but I do feel that there's a certain way in which the way in which our leadership is set up can be opened up to absorb more and more young people, and then we can start to have more conversations that are more critical, and that can contribute towards policies that make sense to so many people, because so many young people also did not turn up to vote. Others did go to vote, obviously, but others didn't turn up to vote because they just didn't know where to go, what direction, because the social media platforms that are used by these political parties to campaign, the campaigning strategies and the campaigning methods to some extent are outdated, and sometimes it's like you're an advert. You're no different to some of these products that are being sold, as opposed to showing much more clearly and communicating much more clearly to the young people that, hey, this is the situation right now. This is how we have contributed. These are our future plans. So I just think it's very complex. There's so much that could be said about it. But I do think that it is worth asking the questions as to why are liberation movements losing power? What is it that they are not listening to about the now? As because they're so fixated on what has happened in the past. The past is very important. We can never negate its importance. However, there's also a certain way in which we need to kind of bridge it with the now and then the future.
Okay, certainly. Let's see on Twitter. Ngoba says the ANC has done its job, liberating us in inverted commas, or rather in brackets. Nonetheless, we need to move forward as people. We cannot always justify ill service delivery with struggle credentials. ANC needs to prioritize its people and create a favorable living environment for all. Mandla says the problem with our politicians is that they don't understand how significant of the significance of public perception and use a useless argument that say they will not adhere to core to public discourse. Populism is the new world order brought by public perception. Look at Ukraine.
Aldrin Sampier, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
Okay, we're going to try to rush through these following calls. Andrew in Attridgeville, please keep it short. Good morning.
Morning, sir. How are you?
Good, good, sir.
Yeah, just to pick up from where Skumbuzo left off. Look, the ANC remains a multi-class organization. It's a broad church with its different strengths within itself. Like you have communists, socialists, liberals within the movement. Now, the problem is that we had to abandon RDP police, which speaks about the redistribution of wealth and other things, then to move towards the gear, because we wanted to appease the liberals across the world. And those issues that you are raising about the IMF and also the structural adjustments and so forth, we had to be in line with those issues. But you can check, as soon as we took over in 1994, most companies, they've switched the domicile from Johannesburg Stock Exchange to London. Your BHP Bulletin, all those big companies, including Glencore. But now the ANC, it has redeemed itself to say the struggle is not done now. Okay. Let us revert back.
Okay, Andrew. Sorry, I'm going to have to cut you there. I just quickly want to go to Owen in Brits. Owen, please be short. We might just run late for news.
Okay. I think the responsibility or the obligation of the liberation movement, especially the ANC, should be an apartheid to the people's mind, and also the economic emancipation. It's needed that they should lead the people in that struggle. And the other thing that I want to emphasize on is the pensioners with struggle credentials. They should give way to young people. And politicians should stop lying and believing in their own lies. Those are my contributions.
Okay,
then
thank you. Thank you, Owen. Thanks for keeping it short. Steve Libilo, I'm going to ask you to be short as well, please. Good morning.
Yes, what a pity. Two things. One to the professor. You know, there's a saying that goes, if you're not a Marxist at 18, you do not have a heart. If you're still a Marxist at 30, you do not have a brain. You know, the transition from being socialist as a liberation movement, you know, to embracing capitalist values, you know, it is something that is not unimaginable. It actually happens. That's the first thing. The second thing is, what a pity again. You know, when you started, you were going to talk about why liberation movement support would actually fall. It's a pity because we could have gone back to patterns of mass mobilization, you know, which accounted for the ANC's popularity. And I think Skumbuzo there made the point, you know, explaining the fact that that mass mobilization, you called it the MDM, you know, the Mass Democratic Movement. I think we could have looked at that if we had the time and try and understand that pattern of mass mobilization and see whether it could have been sustained beyond 1994 and the reasons why it is not being sustained. I think that particular question in this entire discussion has actually been completely missed. Finally, the race issue. I think there's a great deal of misunderstanding. The South African liberation struggle does not come out of a racial struggle. That was the struggle of the 1970s in terms of which it was phrased. The struggle of the 1980s were not about race. They were about obliterating race. That is what the struggle of the mass democratic movement.
Okay, then thank you so much, Steve. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to cut you there. We are running late for news. It's now time for Power News. After Power News, we'll take the closing remarks from our guests. Nobungwele, I agree with you that the discussion on liberation movements is very, very complex and has a lot of legs to it as well. So hopefully one day we'll be able to have a longer discussion around liberation movements and the different facets around it. But just your closing remarks?
opening remarks were just the fact that, I mean, especially from these coming elections, that I think that there's a certain way in which I think the campaigning strategies for these, not just only the liberation movement, but the multiple parties as well, should just kind of shift away too much now from, not actually say that we shift away from the past, but I think that we need to have ways of finding the balance and integrating what had happened in the past and where we come from with our history and where we are headed. And I think that much of future aspirations or future aspects of it as a young person in South Africa are found missing, because most of it has just been hinged on being liberated and being saved. So I think there is definitely a decline in how far this kind of narrative can be stretched. And it's interesting times to see how innovative political parties will then be in approaching future elections.
Okay, then. Thank you so much for your time. Let's go to Professor. Professor, your closing remarks, please.
Okay, thank you very much. I will just say two things to also try to help the speaker who spoke before me, the gentleman before Nohunwe. Number one, we have not ignored the debate about patterns of mass mobilization. We talked about some things, but I want to say just one thing. Number one is that ANC has been mobilizing masses in general, and the trade unions as well. That has not stopped. ANC is using trade unions now, almost to the extent that they are in an abusive relationship where there is an abuse of this alliance system, which I consider as a corrupt relationship between union leadership and the politicians, which is not helping the poor. The hopeless poor workers are just victims and pawns in a big game between corrupt trade union leaders and the ANC leadership itself, to the extent that because of that, the poor are never going to come out of the situation they are in. And for that reason, in the future, this relationship between the ANC and its major parties, the trade unions, is going to collapse. Number two, there's a claim that South African liberation struggle in the 1980s was about obliterating race. And this is where the problem is. It was a completely wrong strategy in the sense that it failed to actually deal with the fundamental issue. The fundamental issue was the economics or the politics of redistribution. You cannot deconstruct racism and race in the country without redistributing the economic goods. The black people remain the biggest recipients of poverty. So one cannot obliterate race without redistribution and reimagining the foundations of social thought in the contemporary world itself. So we are still stuck, and a new way of rethinking the country has to be imagined. And I think the best starting point is to redistribute resources. But redistributing the resources on the basis of a reskilling of our citizens so that they know the basic skills so that they can be self-reliant. Thank you very much.
Okay, then. Thank you so much, Professor Msindo. And Dr. Musubudi Mangena, thank you so much for being part of this discussion. Can I just quickly get your closing remarks?
Well, thank you very much. I think the discussion got derailed somewhat when we particularized. You know, it started being a discussion about the ANC in particular, when in fact it was understood to be a discussion around the phenomenon of liberation movement becoming governing parties and then with the passage of time losing support and popularity in the population. And that trend is discernible, whether you go to India or Nicaragua or Algeria and in our neighboring countries. And in our own country, of course, that phenomenon is discernible. And we were supposed to discuss that. And so we ended up finding ourselves discussing the ANC in particular. And I suppose people then felt that they've got to, those who are members of the ANC felt they've got to come and defend
and defend the party.
Yes. So, but the discussion is broad, it's complicated. There are many factors that contribute to this, including the fact that times move, perspectives change, society changes. And because my parents belonged to the Lutheran Church, it doesn't, although I will grow up in the Lutheran Church and I get attached to it or whatever the case might be, but as I grow older and I have other experiences, I might go to another church. I see this phenomenon now that the traditional churches are losing members, membership to charismatic churches and so on. So society changes.
Yeah.
So it's not something that we should decry, but it's something that we should study.
Okay, then thank you so much, Dr. Mangena. I agree with you. Certainly, this is a complex issue, and hopefully one day, maybe in a month or two, we'd be able to have a two-hour-long discussion around the liberation movements, where liberation movements find themselves, and how do liberation movements ensure that they do not lose power, as we've seen across the continent, and quite particularly here in Southern Africa.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.